Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
Today we bring you kind of a double feature. Two different stories from two different reporters together in this week's From the Newsroom. First up, an investigation into the practice of shuffling police officers from department to department in Massachusetts after they have been fired or forced to resign. And here to break down what's happening, the reporter on this story, WBUR's Walter Wuthman. Welcome back, Walt.
Hey, Tiziana.
So, Walt, listen, how bad is this shuffling around? What did you find in your reporting?
We find that it happens, I think you could say, often. And so the way we tracked this was by filing public records requests with over 100 police departments across the state asking for people who'd been fired or who left while they were being investigated over the last decade. We then cross-referenced those with active rosters of police officers in Massachusetts. And we got a lot of matches. We worked through to try to confirm as many as we could. There's a real lack of public information, but we found that for certain there are more than a dozen current police officers working now that were fired or resigned to avoid some kind of discipline or end an investigation at their former department.
So you used a couple of stories of officers as examples to illustrate that. Maybe give one of those to us here.
One of the most, I think, surprising and illustrative examples, I'd say, is Adam Pecos. He's an officer who was fired for the state police. Police found that he had been caught driving drunk multiple times while off duty. He was intercepted by police officers each time. They didn't arrest him on the scene. There were rumors circulating around the department. Supervisors investigated, and they found that he had driven drunk at least twice, maybe three times. They fired him. He later got a new job in Irving, Massachusetts, which is out in the western part of the state. We got his internal affairs file there, and we found that he'd been arrested for drunk driving again when he was out of state in Seattle. You might think that, okay, that would have ended his career then, but it didn't. He served a brief 5-day suspension, and they later promoted him to sergeant.
And I should ask you, has the officer responded to your reporting?
He has not, no. And we've reached out multiple times through multiple platforms.
Okay, so you introduced us to an expert, Philip Stinson, who's a criminologist at Bowling Green State University in Ohio, who gave you some of the context for your reporting. We actually had a chance to speak with him earlier this morning. So I want to play that discussion. You sit tight, because then we'll come back to you, because I want to ask you some more questions.
Sounds good.
Well, I study police crime, so crime committed by non-federal sworn law enforcement officers across the country. And in my research over the last 18 years or so, we've noticed a phenomenon where officers who get in trouble sometimes end up employed at the same agency. They come back to the same agency, or more often we find them moving from one agency to another. Quite oftentimes it's within the same state. Other times we're surprised to see that officers have moved far away to another state, you know, at the other end of the country. So we call it the officer shuffle. In my research specifically, we only identify the officers who actually have been arrested and then find their way to employment again as a sworn officer somewhere else. But a more common phenomenon, at least anecdotally, from what we've been able to ascertain from talking to people across the country, is that sometimes problem officers who get in trouble over and over again, are given the opportunity to quietly resign from their job as a police officer in one place so as to avoid criminal charges or actually being fired. And those officers seem to have the easiest time with the officer shuffle, moving from agency to agency and taking their problems with them quite often. They're problem officers in one place, and we see it again that they become a problem officer in another place.
So there's a lot there. I want to break down a couple of pieces. First, you said you study officer crime. How prevalent is that? How prevalent is criminal activity by law enforcement officers? You know, however you want to measure it, as a percentage of the police who serve, or however else you might measure that.
Well, it's really difficult. You know, we have probably close to 18,000 state and local law enforcement agencies across the United States. And in my research, we typically identify about 1,200 to 1,300 cases each year where a police officer, a deputy sheriff, a state trooper, a game warden has been arrested for one or more crimes. So we have identified since 2005 officers who've been arrested in approximately 5,000 of those agencies across the country. In large agencies, it's often fewer than 2 or 3% of the officers. In small agencies, sometimes we see the majority of the officers in an agency, in a very small agency, sometimes have been arrested.
So you talked, Philip, about this idea that there's the arrest and a shuffle, and then there's given an opportunity to quietly resign without being arrested. Now, I am not naive. I understand that there is always discretion, right, in choices to prosecute, arrest, et cetera. But what allows police departments to choose not to criminally prosecute an officer and let them quietly leave? Is it just because there's no transparency? Is it, you know, can you explain that a little bit for us?
The problem here is that police chiefs often treat these situations as a bad apple problem. If they get rid of one bad apple, if they get rid of two bad apples, they've solved the problem. But it's a bigger issue than that. The way that I look at it, it's really a problem of police legitimacy. If people don't have faith and trust in their local police officers and their local law enforcement agencies, they're not going to want to cooperate with officers when officers need their help. They're not going to want to cooperate with prosecutors when prosecutors need them to come to court to testify. They're not going to even want to call 911 when they actually have an emergency and need some assistance. So it's a huge problem. It's not a problem of a few bad apples. It's a problem of a culture within policing, what I refer to as the police subculture in many of these agencies. But also the heart of the problem is it leads to an erosion of trust in the police. It leads to an erosion of police legitimacy.
So what about the argument that people change? Should a person have to lose their whole career? Now, I understand sometimes you're talking about criminal activity that could lead to arrest. I understand that not all violations are created equally. But should somebody automatically never be able to serve again as a law enforcement officer?
Well, I think that officers need to be afforded due process, whatever that means, in terms of administrative actions that are taken against officers. They ought to be able to have their case heard. They ought to be able to have a hearing, if that's appropriate, before they're terminated, assuming they're not a probationary officer. In other words, an officer perhaps in their first year of employment. Now, some states, there's no continued right to public employment. So in those states, it's easier for agencies to terminate officers without affording them much, if any, due process. But I think that public employees should be afforded some level of due process. However, that goes in administrative context and that goes in criminal context, obviously. We have to be able to demand and expect more of our police officers. We don't want to have officers who are problem officers, officers who get in trouble as a matter of routine, officers who are bringing disgrace to the badge. I think that the citizens are entitled to better.
In the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, where Walt Wolfman's reporting has happened, here in 2020, our governor signed a police reform bill. It included a police officer standards and training initiative that would begin to license officers, track this data better. We were one of a handful of states that didn't have that. Does that make a difference? Or if not, what else needs to be done besides better data and licensing and tracking to solve this problem?
It does make a difference. However, we have seen some problems. For example, a case in Florida comes to mind where we actually found an officer who had been arrested in Florida, an officer from Daytona Beach, who to resolve her criminal case, she agreed that she would not work in law enforcement again, and she was to be decertified in Florida. That didn't happen for one reason or another. Just administratively, the system failed and it didn't happen. We found her working again as a deputy sheriff in Richmond, Virginia. Much to the surprise of the authorities in Virginia, she had been prosecuted criminally in Florida several years earlier and was to be decertified. So there are sometimes problems with these systems. However, generally, these are very important systems, and they do slow down the officer shuffle. They keep problem officers from being able to move from place to place. They aren't foolproof, but they certainly go a long way in that regard.
Philip Stinson is a criminologist at Bowling Green State University. Really helpful. Thanks for taking the time to join us.
Well, my pleasure.
So returning here to Studio 2 now, as we have this conversation about the moving of officers who are arrested or under investigation, leave one law enforcement agency and then wind up at another. WBUR's Walter Wuthman is still here in Studio 2 and has been reporting on this. I want to start just by getting your reactions to the conversation we just had with Philip Stinson.
He's great. He does really, really cool work, really interesting work all over the country. When I spoke to him for my story, you know, he tracks police crime. So officers that, you know, there's a conviction and they lost their job because of that. That is actually one way to, you know, to track. There's a public record. You know, what he said, I think he used the term his white whale, and what we are also trying to do with our reporting in Massachusetts is that grayer area where the officer resigns before discipline happens. You know, these sort of agreements, this loophole, and it's very hard to track. The way we did it is by asking these departments, okay, who left while they were being investigated, and then following up individually to figure out what actually happened. But this is a way, it's a very common way that police who are accused of often serious misconduct escape accountability.
So that means a ton of legwork. I'm assuming hours and hours and hours of cross-comparing databases after probably, I'm assuming, weeks and weeks and weeks of trying to get the information. Is that fair, Walt?
Yeah, it's a lot of work. And then there's some we just can't even verify. So Grace Ferguson, who was a BU fellow who did a lot of the work with the initial public records in this,
Boston University fellow here at WBUR.
Yeah, at BUR. Yeah. When she was here, she found there are 11 officers in the state named Michael Murphy. 4 of them work for the state police. We have no way to track from the outside which Michael Murphys are moving between which departments. So we just let that be. We're not going to touch that. But the Post Commission, who Phil Stinson was talking about, this new licensing board, they have access to social security numbers, birthdays, addresses, where they can, you know, uniquely identify which Michael Murphy is which, and track who's moving between departments. So when they eventually publish their data, which they're supposed to do, we will have a much better idea of how often these officers are moving between departments.
So you said Post, that's that police officer standards and training, a commission which was put in place in the 2020 police reform law that Governor Baker signed. When do you know, when were they or are they supposed to put that information out?
They were supposed to publish it last spring.
Spring 2022 or spring 2021? Just this past spring?
This past spring. This past spring.
Yeah, I'm throwing dates at you like crazy.
They were supposed to publish it last spring. We've asked many times, okay, what is your new deadline? What is your new deadline? And they won't say. They don't want to set a deadline for themselves because this work is so complicated. They're getting the same barrage of data and even more than we were able to. It's all coming in different forms. There are some departments that are sending incomplete records, incomplete discipline. So they are weeding through a lot of material, and they will not set a deadline. They won't publicly say when all of this will be available.
So I asked you earlier in our conversation, Walt Wuthman, who, you know, WBUR General Assignment Reporter here, whether you had a response from either of the specific police officers that you named with their instances as illustrations in your story. What about from police departments, state police, other law enforcement agencies around the state? Have they commented? Have you received cooperation, pushback? I mean, this story is beginning to take on national attention. It's now posted in the Globe online. It'll be in the print edition tomorrow. What are you hearing?
It's been very hard to get any departments to talk to us, which I think kind of exemplifies this cultural silence. So in Blackstone, which was another case we looked at, there was this officer who was accused of sexually harassing and assaulting a student at UMass Dartmouth.
When he was a university campus officer.
He resigned before that investigation concluded. He later found work in Blackstone, which is a town south of here on the Rhode Island border. And they made him a school resource officer. They put him in the high school, and he's a sexual assault investigator for the town, which seemed odd given his past allegations. So we brought these records to the town. We asked them for comment, and the town administrator said, I was unaware of this. I did not know about this, and I'm concerned about what you're telling us. So apparently they have removed him from the schools, and they've started an investigation of their own, but he's still an active officer in Blackstone, and we may be hearing more from them as this reporting goes on.
So what else are you going to follow now, Walt? What's the next question?
I would really like to see all the data that the Post Commission has. We've tried to get access to parts of it. You know, we've asked if they could do their own analysis of saying, okay, looking at officers with different employment records, with different allegations against us, can you give us a raw number of how many officers have been fired or resigned to avoid, you know, discipline and moved on to a new place? They've declined to give us even that. So we will keep asking. And when that data comes out, we're going to have a much better idea of the scope of this problem.
All right. WBUR reporter Walter Wuthman, who's been following the shuffling of police officers in Massachusetts who leave one department under investigation or arrest and then wind up somewhere else. Walt, thanks for your reporting and for talking to us about it today.
Thank you.
When we return, another story from the newsroom, this time about hidden fees and title insurance. Now, don't start snoozing because it's insurance, because it turns out this really matters for you if you ever want to buy a house. I'm Tiziana Dearing. You are listening to Radio Boston.